For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When I go to Sacramento, I will pump up Sacramento.
Turner Sparks just got married and has moved home to America after 12 years living in China. Sir Michael Ira Kaplan has two kids, a wife, a job, and has spent his entire life in the USA. Neither one can figure their country out. This is Lost in America.
All right, everybody, welcome to Lost in America, episode 34. My name's Turner Sparks.
My name is Michael Kaplan, Sir Michael Kaplan.
Sir!
In honor of Sir Charles Barkley, the fifth pick of the 1984 draft and number 34 for the Philadelphia 76ers.
Yes, he was before he went to the Phoenix Suns and changed
yes.
it
yeah.
to 32. Episode 34, you can find me at Turner B. Sparks on Twitter. You can find Kaplan at Cap
in America.
In America, baby.
Yeah.
This week, we have Evan Blass.
Otherwise known as, or formerly known as Ev Leaks.
Formerly known as Ev Leaks.
He's come out of hiding. He was once not, and that's what he's known by, only Ev Leaks.
He is at Ev Leaks on Twitter, and he's also at Ev Leaks on Weibo.
Weibo.
The Chinese Twitter. This guy is
our first guest who's been on Weibo.
I got to be honest, in this pod, I think he's going to talk about a lot of stuff that I have no clue what it means, because he's a technology guy. He's one of the world's most foremost leakers of new phone technology, all kinds of technology, right? But he leaks...
Phones like Samsung, iPhones, he leaks before it's released, months in advance when there's rumors and people want to know when something's coming out.
He'll tell you when the date is, he might get a picture of it before it comes out.
Yeah, he puts it in the technology community. He's doing this anonymously for a while. It was a big scandal.
We'll get to it later.
We're gonna get to the bottom of it. He's an old friend.
It's exciting, but here's the thing: if you're dumb with technology, don't worry, because I'm more dumb.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna ask.
We're gonna really dumb it down.
We're gonna really dumb
it
down.
Some say we don't always dumb it down enough.
Yeah.
We've heard that in the fan mail.
This one's gonna be straight darn stupid. So, and last thing, thank you to everybody. It was a killer show in Sacramento at the Punchline Comedy Club. Thanks for coming out, Sacktown.
Yeah.
I'll be back soon. Love you, people. Let's get to Lost in America.
Get to it.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Cap, a couple weeks ago, you and I went, got in a car.
Got in my old car, my Mazda.
Road trip for the pod. We went to Philadelphia.
Research. I wanted to show you where America independence came from.
The homeland of freedom.
The homeland of freedom. I wanted to show you the important sites of Philadelphia. What did I show you?
You showed me. We drove through downtown a little bit, and then we went straight to some bar to watch the NBA draft lottery.
Yes, the draft lottery.
Out by the Eagle Stadium, the Sixers Stadium, all that.
Yeah.
Now, if you don't know what the draft lottery is,
let's dumb this down, too.
Okay. So, every year, the worst teams in the NBA that don't make the playoffs get into the draft. They get to draft college players. Before they draft, there's a lottery. They throw ping pong balls in a bucket.
Yeah.
They pick them out. If you get picked first, you get the first pick in the draft. Now, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, America, is the only city in the world insane enough to throw a 5,000-person party just
to watch
this lottery on TV.
It's watching, the actual suspense time is about the same amount of time as the Kentucky Derby. It's like we were drinking
about
and
a minute and a half.
It was like a minute and a half of suspense, and we went there to watch an old white guy come out and pull an envelope out and announce a name.
There is no game being played.
No game.
The team season is over.
Our team season was over. Both of the Sacramento Kings, where your
team. Yeah, my beloved Sacramento
All of our
Kings.
Teams.
Over. But we get down there. There's nowhere else in the world that I can imagine. I don't think this happens. First of all, I don't think they have the draft in other countries.
No, that draft it's part of my big theory. I'm going to write a paper about this one day, how America is the capitalist country.
Okay.
But our sports are the most socialist.
Yeah.
So
because you have to go to whatever team just picks
the worst team. And also, for starters, the worst team gets an advantage every year. We reward teams for being bad.
Yeah, that
they get
not
the highest
American.
Pick. We also have salary caps where, like, so teams can all spend the same amount of money. That
yeah, you can't
anywhere
spend as much as you want, right?
Yeah. So,
if you want to go, if you're a Chinese high school basketball player, first of all, you wouldn't even be because you go to a specific school for basketball. You wouldn't go to like a public high school.
Right.
Then you just, at some point, you sign a contract when you're like 14 with the professional team.
Yeah, exactly. In America, we're making you do education, play for free.
Yeah, so you get money by the time you're 14. It might not be a lot, but you get some. You go to their specific school, and then you're just on their team forever until maybe when you're 25. At some point, you can leave if you're a professional enough, but most of the time, you just stay with that team for as long as you play. And if you're Yao Ming, when you retire, you buy that team.
Yeah, but Yao Ming was the Houston Rockets won the lottery that year. And that is why everyone loves the Houston Rockets in China now, because they won the lottery.
Exactly.
Otherwise, they would be like the Minnesota Timberwolves or maybe the Sacramento Kings.
And in Premier League soccer, it's the same as in China, right? You just sign a contract when you're like
15. In all soccer, they play the junior clubs. They sign these kids when they're really young. They play them on the junior teams, and then they move up basketball too. And they never. There's no draft.
There's no transfer.
They sell players. You could buy your players' rights and stuff.
And then in college sports in America, it's illegal to get paid. Not illegal, but it's against the rules.
You can't play for money. Yeah, yeah. So
which is insane to me.
But anyway, so what were your thoughts on Philadelphia otherwise? We went through Mr. Softy parts, you noticed?
I drove through Runnymede, New Jersey. I didn't have time to stop. Apologies.
Say hi to the old Softy
to my
crew.
Friends in South Jersey. But it's fantastic. I love New Jersey. I love Philly.
And then we went to Wawa on the way home. We were with Weber.
We were with
Weber. He insisted we go to Wawa. He was like, we were driving home. You were driving. I had a few beers last.
There's nothing better than drunk Weber, by the way. Because he gets drunk like once a year.
And he's obsessed with finding a Wawa to eat desserts.
Yeah, he just eats desserts.
Wawa is like a 7-Eleven. You're a 7-Eleven guy. Wawa's like a Philly, South Jersey.
Some people get in fights. Some people cheat on their wives. Weber just buys cookies and cupcakes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what Weber does when he gets drunk.
Yeah.
And he was obsessed with getting to the place. So he's like, you're driving. You don't know where you're going. I was nervous because I didn't know if you've ever driven in America before, if you've driven in the last 12 years.
I drove in China every day of my life. You guys were like drunkenly overprotective. You're like, oh, yeah.
But Weber,
do you know which one's driving?
Well, Weber's not confident in the GPS in the car.
Weber doesn't know how to drive.
So he's looking at his phone. And he's finding the Wawas. And I'm like, he's yelling at you. Get off here. The Wawa. We go in there. He buys every single kind of tasty cake imaginable. Did you like your tasty cakes? It's a Philly thing.
He's making you sample
them while you're driving. So, you know, that was an experience. We were trying to get you the full dietary. Yeah.
But I think we should get to our guest. What do you say? But before we do that, Ints is an app, baby.
They are an app.
Ints in the App Store. You can get it. Go to ENSE, search in the App Store on iTunes, and you can download 5-minute voice recordings. And then put them straight onto Twitter. You can put them anywhere you want. You can link them to WeChat if you're in China, if you're listening to this, to Weibo. If you're a fan of Evlinks on Weibo. And it's great. They're getting better every day. Ikram upstairs, he's working hard.
He's working.
And Nate and the whole gang. So, all right.
Shout out. And
maybe
Evlinks will leak some information about Ince's next update.
June 21st is my next show at the New York Comedy Club, everybody. So get your tickets to that now. Our last one was huge with R.H. Fear and Mark Norman. Yeah. Come on out to that.
I'm going to be at this one.
You're coming.
I'm there.
Everybody's coming. It's going to be great. All right, let's get to our guest.
Get to him.
Everybody, welcome back to the podcast. We're here with our guest, Evan Blass.
That's correct.
Or as he's known in China, the great god, Evlinks.
The great god. We all bow down to thee.
We have come to you. We cannot say where we are. We're in a secret
location here.
But we are not in Manhattan. We're not in New York City. We're not in the Inn Studios.
They might be able to figure it out based on the rest of this podcast, but we're not going to say anything.
We're on the road.
Yeah, on the road somewhere. In the Eastern Seaboard.
So you and Kaplan are friends from school, right?
Yeah.
You grew up together, you were just saying.
Yeah,
from a very young age.
And then at some point...
The Jewish Day School, we need a shout out to them.
Okay.
One of the finest education programs.
That's not true.
We're still a little bitter about it, our parents, and you know.
Then you, at some point, became a leaker of technology information, right? meetings.
Fast forward a long time. Jewish Day School.
Yeah, yeah.
We didn't even have, but we had payphones there. And but
no, yeah. I mean, there's obviously a lot between elementary school and then.
We don't have that much time. Middle school, should we go into
But basically, the important part started a couple years after college. I moved to California, and it didn't work out, so I moved back here to the East Coast, and I got a job at Engadget. I don't know if you've ever...
I know Gadget.
Okay. Engadget.
Oh, Engadget.
Engadget, no, I don't know.
Inspector
Gadget.
Oh, we
should say off the top that I know nothing about
you're very lost
technology in general.
Yeah. So, yeah, by day, I'm a reporter, a technology journalist. All my coworkers call themselves journalists, but I still, refer to myself as kind of like a blogger, reporter, whatever. So I started at Engadget, where you cover a lot of the world of technology. It's not just one particular vertical. It's consumer electronics and robots and space. You have to cover a lot of different things, but you don't know much about anything. And it's tough to be a generalist like that. So I'm much happier now because after I left there, I started working at, fast forward a little bit, to a blog called Pocket Now, which was just a smartphone site. And after having, 2,500 posts about all sorts of different technology, I was just so sick of consumer electronics. But phones have always been my one go-to.
What got you into, were you always just technology day one? You saw something, you're like, that's cool.
I have to give credit to my dad. I'm an only child, so he got our family computers, we had an Apple IIc, I want to say, so we've always had computers. And then in college, I worked at the computer help desk. So if students had problems with their, we had a computer bank, and then if they had problems with their individual machines, they would bring them in. So, troubleshooting for people really, really boosts your tech IQ. What really got me specifically into consumer electronics was working at a consumer electronics store, kind of not a super high-end one, but it was a little higher end than Best Buys or Circuit Cities. I don't know. You probably remember it out on the West Coast. It was called Good Guys.
Yeah, yes. They got to be good. That was their slogan.
Yeah.
We're the good guys. We got to be good.
Yeah.
Which is but only because you named yourself that.
Yeah, it's,
So anyway. And selling people electronics, you have to even know more than you do, working at college. If you couldn't fix something, you couldn't fix it. You're still getting your $5 an hour or whatever. But where I worked, it was all commission based. So if you didn't sell anything, you didn't eat that month.
Wow.
And if you didn't sell anything, you got fired. So then you really didn't eat anything. I ended up, by the time I left there, I was in the video department, selling big TV packages. This was right at the dawn of the flat panel
HD,
age. Yeah. HD was just becoming popular. The plasmas and LCDs had just come out. So that gave me enough of a background to feel really comfortable applying to a tech heavy site. That combined with computer knowledge, that's if you know computers and you know consumer electronics, you're good enough to work at a gadget blog for the most part, because everything else, the robots and stuff, no one knows. So you can just kind of fake it.
And you had a writing background.
Well, I was a political science major. So after Engadget, I went from there to a startup that just kind of floundered. And then after that is when I started to specialize in cell phones. And when I'd worked at bigger sites before, it was just you do your writing and you cash your paycheck and it's fine. There's an ad team that sells the ads. Traffic was great. It was always growing. It was never a problem. But then I'm at this smaller site and, it's much more of a small business. It's the owner is there working right alongside the other writers. And the one way to really boost your traffic, when you're a small site, is to have exclusives. I mean, anyone who's in journalism or does reporting of any kind, your ultimate goal is to get scoops. And so that's really how it started for me, was just the need to get exclusive content, and we, you know, tried all sorts of stuff, and we even, you know, started this program up where we wouldn't actually pay cash to people tipping us, but we would give them points for tips, which, and those points were then redeemable for like cell phones. So we were
rewards program.
I'm sorry?
A rewards program.
Yeah, exactly.
But the type of people, and like, you can stop me anytime you can't talk about it, but the type of person that you might be asking for information.
Are they employees?
I guess they would need a cell phone. I mean, they wouldn't work for a company that already had it. You know, they could get that stuff for free.
Well, I mean, just because, you know, you work at a restaurant, you can get a steak for dinner, doesn't mean you don't want a lobster for dinner sometimes, right, too. I mean,
different company. I see.
So the one thing that I've learned that I will say is that the number of eyes and hands that are on material related to the consumer electronics industry are much, much greater than just like people traditionally think, like, oh, you must know like someone at the company, or you must know, you know, someone who works for the carrier. And in many cases that's true, but in many other cases it's not. And you know, there's a very large ecosystem of people who need to have certain information to do their jobs, certain material, pictures, or, you know, access to devices. And, you know, the wider you cast your net, the more likely you're gonna be to get people who are interested in helping you and not as loyal to whoever the first party, you know, maker of the devices.
Because they might not even work for them. It might be pretty
chip maker, or like the who's doing publicity.
It could be worldwide. I'm guessing. Yeah. I mean, it could, especially with these companies. I mean, you stop. You can tell me, but if you're making cell phones all around the world, then it could be from anywhere in the world. Right.
The person in the factory.
Yeah. I mean, everything now is global, so it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter if you're like just a small Chinese startup. You know, making phones for like, you know, just like the island of Hong Kong or whatever, you might get your marketing done from a South Korean agency. You might get your printed materials from, I don't know, Vietnam. And, you know, so yeah, everything's global. And I mean, having lived in China, I did my research on you. I know you didn't do it on me.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
And so I'm you know, China is like, I almost, you could say, the hub of globalization. I mean,
I worked at a cell phone manufacturer.
Were you one of his sources? Can we come clean
now? I actually forgot I worked there until we came in here and we started talking about it. I'm like, oh, wait a second. I worked for like 9 months. And my business partner with Mr. Softy, his main business was they made printed circuit boards for any cell phone, you know, any contract they could get.
PCBs, we call them, yeah.
Yeah, but
did you actually
work
there?
Not everyone listening to this is going to know what that means.
Did you actually work there, or were you like...
I'm doing this for the audience, not for you.
I have to speak to my audience, too, because I'm going to be tweeting about this.
Yeah. All right, great. Yeah, so PCBs.
But did you actually work there, or was this just like a job you had to have to keep your citizen, stay in the country, show a job, or...
Sort of both. Oh, okay. But I ended up he had me teach English to the people I worked with.
Okay.
While we ramped up Mr. Softy.
Okay.
He let me, like, he was like, yeah, you can just stay here, just sit there, and we'll figure out. He basically had to figure out something for me to do. But the PCBs.
Okay.
But they would take contracts from, this was before the iPhone really took off.
And you didn't leak anything.
I didn't know what even that meant. I didn't know. Who was I going to leak
some
to?
Fame or
I didn't know Ev leaks at that time.
Some points, yeah.
And, what, okay, so when you, the first source you got and then leak you got, was that, how many people, you said you were working with like a couple people, right?
Yeah, it was just a small site, and, you know, I knew people in the industry from having reported on it, so it's not like I was, you know, starting from a dead stop.
Sure.
So why did you decide to leave and go on your own? Is that?
Go ahead.
How long did that take?
So I ended up leaving Pocket Now when he decided to take the site in a different direction. And one of the problems with being a publication and being a small publication and especially in that time, it's a lot different now. But back then there was a lot of threats of legal action, and he had to end up spending quite a bit of money on lawyers, just to, you know, we were doing the same thing as the New York Times was in terms of like reporting on this or that. But, you know, because these manufacturers have intellectual property and, you know, trade secrets, it's a little bit different than reporting on, you know, political.
Trump wishes he could do.
What what was your first leak? What was the story?
I guess I would say that the first leak was there was a phone called the HTC Inspire 4G. It was on AT&T, I think. It was one of their first. It was one of their first 4G phones. It wasn't an LTE phone. It just had like HSDPA speeds that were equivalent, or they were high enough that they could legally market it as 4G. And there were a couple of these phones like that that came out at the same time. And I was able to procure an image of it before it came out. And then we put that up, put a huge watermark on it, you know, okay. like you could barely see the thing. If you're really interested after the show, I can, I'll tell you a little bit more about it, and I'll bring it up on a computer so you can see the article. It's still up. And it kind of snowballed from there. You know?
So you put the watermark on so everyone knew it was yours. The leak was from you.
You watermarked really for two reasons. One is to protect your IP. You know, it's a crazy world out there, and especially in publishing. You know, there's going to be all different types of publications and you know how ethical they are about sourcing and attribution, and if you don't have your mark on a picture, people aren't going to put a link to your story. They're not going to say they got it from you.
No. Yeah.
So you're
steal from the leak.
You're protecting yourself with that, and you're no also morals. Advertising. You know, because the sites that are giving you attribution, they still have the watermark on there, and all their readers, when they look at the picture, they see Pocket Now, Pocket Now, Pocket Now, and you know that's what you want. You want to have enough of these leaks out there that they're seeing that Pocket Now watermark all the time. Eventually, they start thinking, "Wow! Instead of seeing the Pocket Now watermark on site B, why don't you just go to site A where the leaks are actually coming from?"
Yeah. Okay.
And I took that and I blew it up even more. I don't watermark at all anymore. I don't feel like I need to. I feel like I have enough of a name for myself now that I rarely get denied attribution, especially by, you know, any legitimate publication is not going to use any of my material or any of my information without crediting me and giving me a link or whatever. But I used to just put watermarks on everything, and it's helpful for advertising. I mean, because my brand was the same as my Twitter page, it did a third thing for me, which was direct people, you know, right to a channel that they could follow me on. So it's just great advertising from that perspective. But now I feel like people appreciate the fact that when you can leak a clean image, and you know it looks like it would when you see it in you know, advertising or any sort of marketing. And my philosophy on it has changed, at least for me, but I totally understand why there are, you know, other people and websites are still very protective of, you know, their hard-earned scoops, and you want to make sure you get credit for it and you get the biggest bang for your dollar by you know, getting advertising out of it, basically.
Yeah. What did it do for the business you were working for when the first one you did? I mean, was it an immediate, like, you guys, your page views went crazy overnight?
It wasn't a huge phone that a ton of people were interested in. I mean, I have had leaks that you know, have absolutely blown up.
What's the biggest leak?
This year, I leaked the first really good solid render of this phone right here, actually, the Samsung Galaxy S8.
Wow.
It's either the S8 or this is the S8 Plus. I think it was just the regular S8 that I leaked. And people are still looking at that tweet. I think at this point it has 1.3 million views.
Wow.
It got 10,000 likes on it. I mean, the first day that I leaked it, I got 5,000 new followers just that day.
Wow.
Just from one leak.
You start leaking stuff.
Yeah.
How do we need to get in on this? That's a great. And you just broke something today, I believe, right? Is that a?
Yeah, look at you using the terminology.
Yeah.
Wow.
Look at that. I'm learning.
Come on. I was doing Ev.
I wouldn't even call what happened today wasn't even a leak, because it was just something that I found on a public site, and it turned out to be the real kind of leak part was the person who uploaded it made a big mistake in uploading this video, because it contained some very sensitive imagery.
Oh, you saw it in the background or something?
No, it wasn't even in the background. The thing is that a lot of times people who work in the creative fields, like, you know, the ones who are actually making phone renders and marketing materials, they don't just have one client. They're not in-house. You know, they work for a creative agency, a marketing firm, whatever. So they're not cognizant of when the products that they've worked with are actually public knowledge. Because, you know, they have a bunch of different clients. They're working on different projects. They can't track everything. So I certainly don't fault them. And I try to be careful. If I ever find things publicly that I know someone is going to get in trouble for, you know, having accidentally put up on their portfolio or whatever, I try not to link it. If I don't have to, I don't mention their name or anything.
That's why I just screw them over.
Right. So
ethical code in the leaking industry.
I try to be as protective of these people as I can, because, you know, I think of if I was in that situation and how crappy I would feel if, you know, I had to tell my boss, like, hey, like, I just, like, lost us the, you know, the HTC account because I put something up on my portfolio page early. Hey, I'm really sorry.
Someone saw it and took it. When did you decide? Because for a while you were going by a moniker, right? A handle. And then eventually
you were anonymous.
And now you're just going by your name. So when was that switch?
This story hasn't actually been told before.
Breaking news here. Get the breaking news music.
I think I can. I feel.
Declassify it?
I feel okay talking about it. So I unanonymized myself about a year into being out on my own. So after Pocket Now, when I was just didn't have a job except for being a leaker and trying to make, you know, advertising money off of my feed. I came out in an interview to a website called Android Police, and I think it was like May of, I want to say 2013. And the reason I gave for it was, you know, that I thought it was going to be inevitable that I got outed, and, you know, I wanted to be on my own terms. And that was true, but what I didn't say at the time was that someone had actually already outed me. They had bought a website, something like, I think it was like whoisevleaks.com.
Wow.
And they did it under a false name. And, you know, it was designed to come up in a Google search result when anyone typed in whoisevleaks, which I guess people were doing.
It would say your name.
Well, it would, you know, direct them to this site, and it would say Evleaks is Evan Blass. And it, you know, said all this like nasty stuff about me. It was clearly someone who doesn't like me.
Oh, man.
I know. It's just meaning me. You couldn't imagine that people don't like me, but
seemed like a great
probably
man.
Probably a former Jewish day school teacher.
But some of them do. Or a rabbi, even.
Yes, sir. You're not going
to
get the information.
I ended up actually being able to get that site pulled down by sending the host a DMCA. Do you guys know what the DMCA is? The Digital Millennium Copyright Act. It's a law that is meant to protect people who, you know, own copyrights and intellectual property. It was to protect the music industry, movies, but you can also use it, like, if there's a picture of me out there, I own the copyright to that. So they used like one small picture of me on the site, and that was enough for me to send a DMCA takedown notice for this outing site. And because the person who had who had registered the site and made it used a false name and false information, they had no ability to appeal. So even if my takedown had been complete BS, it still would have worked, because they couldn't you know, they couldn't provide the, they would have perjured themselves basically if they had tried to appeal it.
So why'd you come clean then if you had this?
Because it was still, you know, cached, and you know, Google Cache is still going to bring the site up for a while. I think it's in the Wayback Machine, which is like an archive of a lot of old web pages. And it made me realize that, you know, I am going to get, this is going to happen. Someone else is going to do this at some point, and it might not be something that I have so much warning about and have so much control over. It might be something where it's, you know, someone else who has a popular Twitter account just decides to out me and, you know, at the same time give out my phone number and my address and, you know, my shoe size.
Before you came clean, though, did you have like close calls or someone contacted you and was like, are you, and you just had to deny it? Or
I was never very adamant about keeping it a secret. Oh, okay. at the granular level, like people I knew, you know, knew it was me. It wasn't a secret. Yeah. And I was fine telling new people. What I wouldn't do is, you know, go outside with a megaphone, which in my case was Twitter, and tell everyone, or at least everyone who would care, which were, you know, the couple of people who followed me or, you know, read about my leaks on different websites.
So then how'd you feel after that? You feel like, was it just like great? Like,
I thought it was sad. I didn't decide to be anonymous because I was like scared of getting prosecuted or of people knowing who I was. I did it because I thought it added like a cool twist. Like I knew I had the ability to leak a lot of stuff, and I thought that it would become sort of like legendary. Like, who is this guy who just like, who is this like crazy anonymous insider who knows like all these people, can get all this stuff, and we don't know who he is. Like, I thought it would add to the allure, which would boost the popularity, and I think it did.
Yeah, was it also with sources? Maybe do sources, are they more, if this person's anonymous seeming, is it, I don't know, can be traced back to them as easier? Or?
Yeah.
Does that protect sources? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I don't know.
I think it probably does. Obviously. I mean, the best way to find anyone's sources is, of course, to, you know, why would I talk about this? Never mind.
Whoops.
I'm not going to give advice on how.
But are you still gaining sources? I mean, you're still out there gaining new people who.
It snowballs. The more well known you get. I get like a dozen tips a day now, and you know,
just send stuff to you.
Oh, all the time.
You have to check it out. Obviously, you can get more incorrect things if you get more.
Yeah, I'm good about it now. When it was something that I was doing as my full time job, and I you know, it was like make or break for me, then I was a lot less cautious. And I'll be the first to admit, I put up a bunch of leaks that ended up being hoaxes. Like, people were hoaxing me, and they were elaborate hoaxes, but still, like, you know, I was far too trusting of people who just write in. Now I'm like very discerning, and you know, I know that like I have enough of I have enough momentum at this point where I don't need to just put up like some like random phone that I've never heard of. Like, oh, you mean this company's got this phone coming out, and I've never heard a word about it, but you know it and have the render of it already, like. It just, I didn't use a lot of critical thinking, and the thing is, especially when you're newer to this game, you want these things to be true. The too good to be true leaks are the ones that are like dynamite, and that you like hope to God are true, because like, hey, this is like the scoop of the year for me. So yeah, I don't think I've had, I mean, it's been well over a year, probably even 2 years that I've put up anything that turned out to be like remotely even inaccurate, I want to say, because, you know, I take my reputation very seriously, and not all my reputation, but at least
you're doing our podcast, so it can't be that serious.
No, I mean, the one part of my reputation that's most important to me is my credibility.
Yeah,
because that's all you have when you're doing something like this. It's the only thing that differentiates you from everyone else who's out there trying to put stuff up and making a name for themselves. And it's the currency that has allowed me to to be trusted by major news organizations like, you know, CNET and even like, you know, some TV networks, BBC. They now know that I have enough of a history of putting up accurate info and that I'm discerning enough in my selection of stories and information I put up that if I say something, they don't have to check it out. Like, you can bank on the fact that if I put something up, you can pass it on to your readers and it's not going to come back to bite you as being a false story.
And so much stuff nowadays, people just retweet stuff and without even ever checking.
Oh,
it's good
my,
to,
yeah. My dad's emails.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is true or not, but someone's
crazy if it
me.
Is. So it's good advice for journalism students out there to listen to.
And then what were you doing? Because before we started the podcast, you were talking a little bit about China and you have a Weibo account. What were you doing in China? You said you've been over there, right?
No, I've never been to China.
Oh. You have a following there.
I do. And I let my Weibo, as you call it, account. I call it Weibo. I let it go for...
Is it that Roche?
Weibo.
For 3 years. I stopped doing it in mid-2014 when I retired from leaking for a little while. So I
thought you were out of the game. And then
I gradually got back into it. It's hard. You know, it's addicting.
When you were retired, were people sending you stuff and you were just ignoring it or just saying, I'm not interested in your tip? Or
yeah, what do you do with the information?
Yeah.
Sometimes I would take it and just pass it on
pass
to someone
on.
Else.
Yeah.
You know?
Wow.
But yeah, it is frustrating because when you do that and you pass it on, you see this story blow up and everyone's covering it. You're like, you know,
yeah.
Damn, that could have been me. And
you don't want to be on the sidelines.
And that's
it's hard to walk away from the game.
Yeah. You know, I just hope I'm smart enough to be a Derek Jeter and you know, yeah. Walk away while
at the top.
Yeah.
John Elway.
Are there goals though? I mean, like, have you ever broken like an iPhone thing or is that like a
yeah last a, year I 3 months before the iPhone was announced I was able to prognosticate down to the day it would be released.
Ooh.
And so it was a little nerve-wracking. I was, you know, yeah. Pretty confident I wouldn't have reported something that big, but it got picked up everywhere, like, you know, mainstream news sites and really all over the internet. And you know, as it got closer and closer to the date of the launch, you know, there was that's the one thing everyone wants to know is when can I buy it? When's the release going to be? And, you know, some days it would look good, like, oh, yeah, you know, the information we have now looks like the date you said is accurate. Then other information would come out and it was like, you know, with this new information, there's no way it could be the day that you said. So it's like, you know, it's definitely nerve-wracking when, you know, you're going through 3 months like that. But I ended up being right. And,
is there anything you can leak now to us?
And this is coming out in a couple of weeks, so
we'll put it out immediately.
We won't leak your leak if there's something incoming in the next.
I've already given more than a half hour. No, I'll end with actually one story that's only peripherally leak related, but it does have to do with an iPhone, and it's actually probably the moment I'm proudest of in my career doing any of this because it was a real solid scoop, and it was one that I found. I didn't need any sources for it, and it just struck a nerve with people. And what it was when I was still working at Pocket Now, it was on the eve of it was a couple months prior to the launch of the iPhone 4S, and I decided to. Just on a whim, to look on Flickr. I mean, you know what Flickr is? It's a photo sharing site. And I wondered, I was like, you know, in all these photos on Flickr, I wonder if there's any that have been taken by this unreleased iPhone, which people at the time were calling the iPhone 5. Because we didn't know at that point that they went, you know,
4S,
4S 5S, whatever.
5.
So I came up with pretty complex Google search that used a bunch of different parameters to add certain phrases, to eliminate others, so that it would basically search the metadata sections of Flickr where the cameras give out their information.
The source of the picture, yeah.
So I think I told it something like, I want a listing that says an iPhone but I don't want it to be any of the existing iPhones, and I don't want it to have any of the apertures, the f-stops
yep.
of any of the existing iPhones. And I, dumb luck, I came up with like one result. And so I looked at I started, you know, researching the photo and who took it, and lo and behold, it was an Apple engineer. And if you looked at the metadata of the photo, where was it taken? One infinite loop, like the cafeteria of like their main campus. But the best part was when I looked in the EXIF data, I saw that although the photo had been cropped down to a certain size so that it was made to appear like it was taken with the iPhone 4, the original, it was made to look like a 5-megapixel photo, but it had actually been cropped down from an 8-megapixel photo, which, you know, was much bigger than the sensor. So it was obvious at that point with all this, the different pieces of EXIF data that this was a photo taken by an iPhone engineer, and he posted it on his Flickr account. And the coolest thing about it was sort of like an iconic photo. It was like a beautiful plate of sushi.
Nice.
And it got, I'll show that to you too when we drop off the air, because it was picked up by like CNN and Fox.
I remember that. I didn't want to cut you off in the middle, but I remember when this came out.
It was so great. And it wasn't even like really a leak. You know, anyone could have done it. You need any sources. All you needed was like to be like a little bit like clever and have, you know,
a genius, actually.
Some knowledge of search parameters. And so I just felt really good about that. And it has nothing to do with leaking, nothing to do with F leaking, but
yeah,
but like, nonetheless,
some like,
government.
I mean,
any of our young leakers out there, yeah. they can do it.
Don't knock that Jewish day school education, because that's pretty genius, that whole thing you just came up with.
Yeah, imagine if I had half the day that I was, you know, learning a language and religion that I don't use to...
You seeped in, like the Mossad came into your brain somehow. That's how they would have figured that out.
Can I ask a little bit about China and the China technology and everything?
All right. I'm going to have to bill you for another hour, though.
let's get into China and maybe a few trends that...
Well, yeah. What? Because when I first got there, it was 2004, and obviously there was cell phones in general were pretty basic. But then it seemed like in the last couple years before I left, meaning 2013, 14, 15, people in China, expats, everybody was saying that more and more people were saying like, whoa, this phone, I have this Chinese phone, it's as good as an Apple or anything I can get anywhere else, and it's way cheaper. Is that true or
no? I mean, especially here in the States, you know, in China, they wouldn't say like the, you know, Chinese phones have a bad rap, because that's all that they were getting there at the time. So
at the time, yeah.
But here in the States, you know, the best phones were generally coming from Japan or Korea and a couple, you know, European countries, companies like Nokia.
Nokia, yeah.
Yeah.
But
Ericsson.
Within the last 4 to 5 years, there have been a few Chinese companies that have really refined their manufacturing, their design capabilities, their software development, and they're, if not quite at the Apple level, they're like right on the cusp. And I'm, you know, talking mainly about Huawei here, but even companies like Xiaomi.
Mm-hmm.
Did I say that right?
Xiaomi.
Shout
and
out
Huawei.
For Xiaomi.
Yeah, Huawei. Yeah.
Huawei.
And Xiaomi.
Those two have, and then there's also a smaller boutique firm that's made a big splash internationally named OnePlus.
Okay.
They're an offshoot of another Chinese manufacturer who also has some pretty good design chops called Oppo or Apple.
Okay. Yeah, I've seen that.
So yeah, I mean, if you were to have, when you left the U.S., I don't even know if the carriers were stocking even like flip phones or like candy bar phones from Chinese manufacturers. They didn't have a good rep, and they know it because the quality wasn't there yet.
Even when I got there, everyone had like Nokias. No, even Chinese people weren't buying Chinese phones. Really. I didn't know anybody that did, you know, because it was also they would get. Like, I remember I had a phone one time that had an antenna come out of it. There's always crazy ideas.
My first cell phone ever had that.
And it was like a TV But it only worked within the neighborhood, or you know, like the local TV channels.
Yeah, that never took off here. The over the air digital TV for cell phones.
Yeah, yeah, and it was a brick. It was really thin.
Well, they don't have cable the same penetration the same in China, so maybe that.
I don't know.
Are we allowed to say that word on air penetration?
We are. We say it's a family podcast, but it's a, you know, yeah, not really.
Yeah, there's no.
In China, is there like at this point? Is the phone culture the same as it is here as far as, like, everyone's on a smartphone?
It's totally the same. There's Apple stores everywhere. Everyone, the day the Apple comes out, it probably comes out, you would know better than I do, but I think it comes out the same day everywhere.
China is their second biggest market, Apple's, and I shouldn't say it, but it, at least up until very, very recently, it was on track to eventually pass the U.S. as their biggest market. Apple's has seen a little bit of trouble in China recently because the proliferation of competition is just so great there. The home country brands are offering better quality at lower prices, but not the same cachet as Apple. But one of Apple's problems has been for the last 3 years, all the phones have looked the same. And from what I hear in the Chinese market, you know, if you're going to spend money on a new phone, you want it to, like, look like a hot new phone. You don't want it to look like, you don't want people to think like, hey, you know, you might have bought last year's phone or.
True.
You know, so.
Yeah. Very superficial.
Yeah, you want to show that it's new. It's a big show, like, culture, right?
So if.
Curved? Or they gonna...
So if Apple wants to really keep on that trajectory of having China be even more of a profitable market for it than the U.S., they're going to have to start iterating their, if not the features, at least the design faster. Like, the phones are going to have to look like hotter, you know, smaller bezels, you know, flashier gold or whatever each year. Or if they keep going through these 2 year cycles, what it's called is a TikTok, where like the tick years are where they come out with a new design, and the tock years are the S years where it's, you know, the sales go down, whatever. And then even though they claim that the iPhone 7 was, you know, a new design, was a tick year, it really felt like a tock year to everyone.
It's very similar to the 6, really, right?
Yeah.
So now there's a lot riding on what happens this year, especially how it's received in the Chinese market, because there's going to be 3 phones. This is not information I'm leaking you here, by the way. This was
according to our audience.
We're too lazy
anyway
to Google things, clearly. So yeah, this is information.
So there's going to be 2 handsets that are more natural progressions from the iPhone 7. I don't know what they're going to be called. They might be 7S or they might be 8. But then there's going to be 1 special handset that's going to be in shorter supply, and it's not going to look like the other ones. It's going to look more like this phone here, which, you know, is almost a full touchscreen with no bezels.
It's the Samsung 8, Samsung Galaxy 8?
S8 Plus.
S8 Plus, okay.
And it's going to, you know, have different cameras, different features. It's really going to be a premium marquee edition, and it's going to be the one that everyone wants. And because it's going to have an OLED screen, which are in shorter supply and have lower yields than, you know, traditional LCD screens that are on most phones. Apple's hoping that they can make enough to almost meet demand, but just enough so that, you know, people are still like hungry for it. If they can achieve that whatever, you know, balance that they project that they need, it's gonna probably push the company over the, if they're not already, by that time they'll be over, it'll be like the first company ever, I think, to have a market cap of $1 trillion.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, I don't even know how many zeros are in that. It's so big.
Yeah, I don't either.
They need to make something special for China.
That's what you're saying. I think that's what you mean by this limited edition.
But it's not going to be just for China, but they may tweak the distribution, as to, you know, the allocations to make sure that they have enough, you know, they have relatively more of this phone for the Chinese market than the US market, perhaps. I don't know that for a fact, but thinking that, you know, customers in the U.S. may be a little bit more patient and willing to wait for it, while people in China, if they can't get it, they'll just get something else.
Yeah.
In the U.S., we love to wait in line for things, so people will have to wait at the Apple store.
Well, and I mean, I guess it's the same here, right? But I've noticed when I was living in China, people will get new phones all the time.
Right.
Like, once a year, like a lot of people, just like how they used to buy new cars.
They
in the 50s.
It's crazy. They wouldn't buy. You wouldn't like get a new computer every time a new computer comes out. But like people will get a new.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Thanks for being on the podcast.
Thanks for having me, guys. It was fun.
What's your give out your Twitter?
Anything? I mean, not that you need our help, but you know.
Yeah, it's just
people want to find you
at EvLeaks or at EVLeaks, depending on how you pronounce it.
EVLeaks, EvLeaks.
All right. Thanks a lot, Evan.
But you can also look it up under Evan Blass.
Evan Blass. Fantastic. Thank you very much.
Legend. So, Jewish Day School. Shout out.
Welcome back. Thank you to Evan Blass for being on the podcast.
Yeah. I'll see you at the Jewish Disco reunion, Evan.
We will see. I'll come. Why not?
Yeah, you're on to remember now.
First thing in the news today, parents. This is from the Wall Street Journal, Kaplan. I got bad news for you.
Yeah? What's that?
Parents don't want to name their kids Mike anymore.
What about Michael?
Now, I think that's right in there. The number of baby boys named Michael fell last year to the lowest level since 1940, Kaplan.
Because my whole life, we've been the number one name in America.
Yeah, well, you're not. One. How do you feel about that?
So where are we now?
You're very low. I said don't ask follow-up questions last week, and that's what I would say. I got a couple quotes from famous Michaels here.
Yeah.
This is from the Wall Street Journal. I'm distressed, says 83-year-old Michael Dukakis, the failed 1988 Democratic presidential contender and former governor of Massachusetts. And then another one. I'm looking at some of these names now. I don't even know where the mothers get these names, added football legend Mike Ditka.
Well, I'm seeing here that we've fallen to number 8. So we're not, but you know, that's not good. Because Michael, my whole life I've been proud. This is like a thing. The Michaels of the world. I was a member of a group, the Michael Kaplans of the World, once on Facebook.
There were
5 of us. Michael's a popular name. I will say, though, now that it's fallen, I'm excited because it'll... None of the kids in my kids. There's no kids in my neighborhood named Michael.
Really?
None.
Oh.
Because everyone's named Aiden or Hudson.
So now's the time to name a
hipsters,
Michael.
Like you go into these classes, Keaton or parents have these kids special names. Ruby. What are we? Everyone's got a special name, and you know, like the number one names now are like you know they're just Emma.
Can I
like
say this? I think that my parents were on the front end of this
train. They were cutting edge.
With Turner and Tyler.
On the rankings? Yeah.
Turner and Tyler. No one at that time was named Turner or Tyler. No one actually still is. The only people named Turner is anyone I'm related to. My dad's frat brother from college, that's where they got the name. And then my friend Kim Parks, who I grew up with, she named her kid Turner. And I was hoping his name was Turner Parks.
Yeah.
That's very close. But then she got married to someone.
Did your parents just have to have T's? Was that their big thing?
Yeah, because my cousins are Terry and Tammy. So,
they
were back in the early 80s. They were the first of like this wave of parents that didn't want to do normal names, you know?
Because they were really ahead of edge. Because our generation, I feel like it was all normal names. Like
a lot of Brian,
Michael, Jeff, John, John's, you know, David.
Yeah.
You know, and like, go back generations. Like my dad's name is Bob. My boss's name is Bob. My old boss's name is Bob. A lot of Roberts out there. A
lot of Bobs.
My grandfather was Hyman. It's a name that like. Doesn't exist anymore. It's been eradicated from the record.
That is way
faster
out.
Than Adolf was eradicated.
High is a good name, though.
Yeah, but
faster than Adolf.
But you go back in the old days, Hyman Roth, like every old Jew had this name High, and it's just gone.
That would be a good name to bring back. But one day,
hipsters bring these names back, and then they get to a point like we have Teddy. It's not. It's a little bit hip. It's a little bit rare.
Yeah,
but it's not super rare. But I know for a fact, unfortunately, that in the third spoiler alert, in the third 50 Shades of whatever that nonsense is.
Oh gosh.
The third one, they have a baby, and they name him Teddy.
Uh-oh.
So that's going to... When that movie comes out, it's freaking over
that's
for that name.
That's the new Britney.
Yeah.
Remember when everyone white trash named their kid Britney from Britney Spears?
Exactly. What that's going to... But what I was going to ask you is that in China, you told me that everyone takes like an American name.
Yeah, so, well, they have their own name.
Right. So what are the most popular names in China?
For American English names?
Well, I'm not going to ask you to ask for the Chinese. I don't know
if
you know that.
Well, Wong is probably a big one.
Big one.
But no, for when they go English names,
yeah. What are the big English names?
It's interesting. They all pick like the women all pick the names of like what, like an 80s like travel agent names.
Oh,
like there's Brenda, a lot of Vivians.
Vivian, okay.
Yeah, there's a lot of
Claire.
A lot of Claires.
Right.
Yeah, there are Claires. There's Vivians.
Denise.
There is Shelley is a huge
Shelley,
one.
Oh, yeah. That's her 80s name in general.
And those, I would say, are the
so
biggest.
So then Michael, they must, if they go to the 80s, I mean, Michael Jackson, Michael Jordan, Mike Tyson, there's a lot of Michaels that were dominating the 80s. So
they do love Michaels. A lot of people, oh, you know what's big? Rose and Jack, because they love Titanic.
That's amazing.
So everyone names themselves Rose or Jack.
So can we start a movement, if you love the pod, Michael right here?
Or Turner.
Turner. Can we make these the biggest? Can we get these in the top 10 in China? I don't care about America.
And we want, or Blue Shirt.
Blue
Shirt's a good name.
Michael Weber, another.
What I do like about China is, yeah, let's be number one in China. What I do like about China is they're not afraid to go off the grid. I'm not sure if I mentioned this before, but I used to teach a kid, and his name was his full name was King of All Fighters.
King of All Fighters?
Yeah, but he went by King.
Oh, King.
You can call him a King.
All right. Yeah. So, you know, I'm not going to have a third kid. I can't name Michael. Jews, we don't name juniors. That's not a thing we do.
Oh.
So I can't help here, but okay. I can just urge others to help.
Well, let's do it in China.
All right. Thank you, fans.
Okay, last story, Cap. We're running out of time.
I don't even have news. I got to ask you for help.
Okay, what do you got?
This is my local news.
Okay.
I've got a book here. I got it for my son. It's called It's Hard to Be Five. It's written by Jamie Lee Curtis.
Okay.
And it's a great book. He loves it. I read it to him every night.
Stressful being five.
Yeah, it's all about how stressful being five. So it's a really artistic book. There's stuff in the background, and there's one thing in the background in one of these pages, and it says five around the world, and it tells you what five-year-olds are doing in countries around the world.
Can I say one thing?
Yeah.
Yesterday was Natalie Sparks, my niece's fifth birthday,
oh, so
maybe I'll get her this book.
Get her this book, yes.
Happy birthday, Natalie.
Get it before this pod comes out.
Okay.
So she does it. And happy birthday, Natalie. So I just want one thing I want to say first, a little bone to pick with typical America-hating Hollywood Jamie Lee Curtis here.
Sure.
For United States, it says, in the United States, a five-year-old is learning to tie his shoes.
That's not is that true at five?
I don't know, but it'll say, in Africa, a five-year-old hunts for food and helps preserve endangered species.
Okay, but
think
they also,
in what a five-year-old
wait, and they don't wear shoes.
Yeah, exactly. In South America, a five-year-old is helping to save the rainforest. They're running around, they're saving rainforests, and in Nepal, a five-year-old meditates and climbs tall mountains.
What?
This is what they're saying. In Iceland, a five-year-old mines for ice. So anyway,
what does it say about China?
That's what I want to get to. In China, and then the like bed the kid sleeps in blocks the part. You can't read. It just says in China, blank, 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 old works, blank, 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 her mother, blank, 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 rice patties.
So what? I want
to know if you could fill in the blanks for me. You know what that goes on in China, or if there's something more accurate. What is a five-year-old?
I have a few things to say. Number one, Jamie Lee Curtis sounds like a racist in this. She's just going with rice patties as the number one thing. She's going with climbing mountains. She's going hunting food for Africans. Does she not know? I was joking about the sandals. In Africa, they have cities.
Yeah.
There's cities in every country. There's people. There's like commerce. They're not. Yeah. People aren't running around Africa hunting for food.
I think Jamie Lee Curtis isn't that up on like what's going on currently, because it'll say for Russia, it says in the former Soviet Union. This book was written in 2005.
She's like a novice armchair liberal. At least do your research if you're going to like say that America's the worst place on earth. And secondly, okay.
So what is a five-year-old learning in China? What are they doing? What's a five-year-old life like? Teddy wants to know, and Natalie wants to know.
I used to teach five-year-olds. Not one of them was blank, blank, blank rice patties.
All right.
They were all sitting around. Wait. Well, one thing is that they're one child. It's a one child policy, right? Now it's two, but for a long time it was one. And so they're incredibly spoiled. And I don't think Chinese people would disagree with me on that. And parents always say that. They go, I spoil my kid, but I don't know what to do. It's my only one. And my grandparents and my wife's grandparents, there's six of us looking after one kid, you know? So I've sat across the table from 7 year olds, my friend's nephew, who didn't know how to feed himself.
What do you mean? He didn't know how to eat?
He sat at the table, opened his mouth, and waited for his grandma to shovel food.
Like baby food? Like the way you feed babies? Here comes the airplane.
Exactly, but the airplane was full of, like, regular food.
I mean, it's so hard to get kids to eat, but if I try to feed Teddy,
I don't know how. I wouldn't say that's every 7-year-old, but I've seen a lot of these kids that don't know how.
So they don't know how to use chopsticks?
Yeah, because they're just so used to being, like, just...
Well, Teddy's ahead. So, because we were, the other night, we were out for dinner at a Japanese restaurant. Because Teddy's really in Asia. He says he's from Asia, so he likes to know Japanese. And I got him. It was like the most mind trick thing as a parent. I was so proud of myself. He ate broccoli for the first time, and he did it because of the chopstick. It was like a kid's chopstick, the ones that are attached on the end.
Yeah.
Which maybe they need to get for China to get kids more self-sufficient.
They do have those.
All right. And he wanted to play with it, so he ate broccoli.
Yeah. Kids get these
and
kids.
And a five-year-old in America.
I think what the problem is, it's not that they would have the ability to, but they have six two parents and four grandparents around them at all times, waiting to do everything
for
them.
Oh, so they wipe their asses for them?
100%. I mean, like, literally. They do.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Teddy's, he's very high maintenance. He probably would love to move to China now.
So I know when Yaya...
he does not...
I know when Yaya came here and hung with my family for the first time, she was impressed by how my niece and nephew... Can't do it. What two ages?
I've seen
like
those Sparks kids. They're very self-sufficient kids.
At ages 2 and 4, they were ordering.
They're ordering it to restaurants,
dinner for themselves, and everything.
Yeah.
So
Tyler, he knows what he's doing.
All right, Cap.
Can I tell you one last thing I've learned?
Yes.
In Antarctica, 5-year-olds are making ice sculptures and performing surgery. I think there might be some tongue in cheek.
There's no there's no people in Antarctica. That's ridiculous.
That's put a flaw in this book.
You get lost, Jamie Lee Curtis.
All right, let's get lost.
All right, let's get lost.
Secretly plotting your demise. I want to devise a virus to bring dire straits to your environment. Crush your corporations with a mild touch. Trash the whole computer system and revert you to papyrus. I want to make a super virus strong enough to cause blackouts in every single metropolis. Cause they don't want to unify us. So fuck it. Total anarchy and can't nobody stop us. You see, late in the evening, fucked up on my computer and my mind starts roaming. I create like a heathen. The first cycles of this virus I could send through a modem. Infiltration hits your station. No Microsoft or enhanced DOS will impede. Society thinks they're safe when bingo hard drive crashes from the rending. A lot of hackers tried viruses before. Vaporize your text like so much whiteout. I want it where file replication is a chore. Lights out, shut down entire White House. I don't want just a bug that could be corrected. I'm erecting immaculate design. Break the nation down section by section. Even to the greatest minds, it's impossible to find. I want to devise a virus to bring dire straits to your environment. Crush your corporations with a mild touch. Trash your whole computer system and revert you to papyrus. I want to devise a virus to bring dire straits to your environment. Crush your corporations with a mild touch. Trash your whole computer system and revert you to papyrus.
I have already planned. The plan is programmed into every one of my 1,000 robots. We will not hesitate. We will destroy the Homo sapien. Please stay where you are.
Psst, I'm making some shit in my basement. I'm gonna do it to him. Don't tell him though. I love you. Pete.
I wanna develop a super virus. Better by far than that old Y2K. This is 3030, the time of global unification. Break right through they terminals, burn them all. Slaves of silicon, corrupt politicians with leaders and their keywords. FBI and spies stealing bombs, dissipate their plans in their face and catch the fever. Everybody loot the stores, get your canned goods. Even space stations are having a hard time. Peacekeepers seek to take our manhood, which results in the form of global apartheid. Ghettos are trash dumps with gas pumps, exploded and burnt out since before the Great Union. The last punks walk around like mass monks, ready to manipulate the database or break through them. Human rights come in 100th place. Mass production has always been number one. New Earth has become a repugnant place, so it's time to spread the fear that's fun to some.
Too long have we tried to extend our glorious empire out to the stars, only to be driven.
I want to devise a virus to bring dire straits to your environment. Crush your corporations with a mild touch. Trash the whole computer system and revert you to papyrus. I want to devise a virus to bring dire straits to your environment. Crush your corporations with a mild touch. Trash the whole computer system and revert you to papyrus.
Are we?
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.